Welcome to Generation Now, a show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. Every generation has had to grapple with who has access to the full rights of humanity in America. And I believe racial tensions are baked in to the DNA of our country. But it's always been young people with really nothing to lose who stand in the crossroads fighting for what is right. And in Kenosha, we have a group that is doing exactly that, stepping into the void with their own unique voices, fighting for what they believe is right. The Equiteens have created a grassroots movement led by young people in Kenosha fighting for racial equality. Two members of the group are with me today. Please welcome Meredith Kaufman and Alana Carmichael. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So you guys are both at Indian Trail. You're going to be juniors this year. How did you guys get started with this? What were those early conversations like?
So it really started with the senseless murder of George Floyd. There was a lot of just complete outrage in all of the community, but like in Kenosha in a way I'd never seen before. And I kind of just, we just started a group chat, which on Snapchat. So we just kind of started with social media and we've kind of kept it as social media up until this point. But we started talking, we're like, what can we do? And I mean, it started with that first protest. We like about, I don't even know, like a month, 2-3 weeks before the protest even happened, we started planning it. And it just started with what can we do in Kenosha and involve members of our generation, because we were just truly outraged by what we were seeing in our community and in our country.
Alana, what about you? What was the conversation like being in that group chat in the early days?
Oh man, it was a bit hectic. It was, there was a few more of us than there are right now because we had a group helping us plan the protests and then a group helping us, you know, plan our platforms. And so some people were in pretty much only for the protests, and some of them even split off and started their own group, which is really cool too. But yeah, it was definitely very hectic. We had a lot of ideas to go over, a lot of things to plan out and like finalize like the location, the time and all that. So it was definitely very stressful sometimes, but I think it was just very, very worth it.
It's interesting you mentioned something that I think a lot of, I guess, older people don't understand, but it's kind of the decentralized leadership. I mean, in the old days, people would be upset that another group was spun off or that other people had a different vision. But Alana, you said that was not an issue. You said that was cool.
Yeah, I think it's good that, you know, the topic is being talked about everywhere. Even if like it's a spinoff group of ours, I think that's still very good. I think it's giving the issue the attention it needs.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This is Meredith. I think that the fact that we kind of split, you know, it's hard to work in a big group, especially with teenagers. So I think the fact that people took control of that situation, we're like, hey, we have the same ideas, but there's power in numbers. So I think the fact that there's two Kenosha groups now just really shows how passionate our peers are and how about we are on subjects of injustices.
Yeah, and I think that's what is, dare I say, shaking up a lot of people and unnerving them, is that this level of intense passion where you're seeing protests, I mean, continual for months here, organized and well-organized, I might add, by young people. It's very different than what has happened in the past. I want to touch on the fact that you guys are going to be juniors at Indian Trail this year. We've also had COVID-19 wreak havoc on your lives, specifically if you had plans for a summer job or, you know, heck, to finish school, right? That has changed. So talk about how that influenced the movement as you guys were getting rolling.
This is Alana. I think it definitely impacted us because as tragic as it is, and just itself that people are, you know, falling sick and even dying from it, it gave us a lot of freedom and time because we weren't in school to, you know, wrap our heads around the ideas of, okay, where do we want to take this? How, like, do we want to plan more than one protest? Do we want to create a platform? And I think, although it's shaken up our lives in more negative ways than I think positive, I think that the time that being out of school has given us is just our full attention on really bringing, I guess, awareness to the issue.
Yeah, this is Meredith. I completely agree with that. I think the fact that there wasn't really school or sports at the time kind of just freed up time in our lives to be able to really sit and kind of process like we hadn't ever before. And it also gave us a chance to have time because in a normal non-COVID life, we're all extremely busy people. We have school, sports, social, everything. But the fact that we were social distancing, it also brought a unique challenge because we had to factor in that with large groups of people comes extremely high risks.
Yeah.
And we kind of took that as an opportunity to go to and like expand our social media platforms first. And we held it off the protest for two reasons, one being COVID and another being the significance of June 19th. And we kind of just worked that into our platform. So, I mean, just promoting the social distancing within, because protesters are no good if they're in the hospital on a ventilator. So I think just like safety first was really a big concern and a new challenge, but I think we handled it pretty well, especially on the day of our June 19th protest.
Right, which was all over social media and there was a great turnout, safe turnout. But I also want to say this, and this is not going to make me very popular with the education people, but again, I really don't care. I think that the education that you got from organizing those protests and from being in the crosshairs of setting this up and organizing is as much of an education or as an important of an education as you could ever receive. You can't teach that in school. You can't teach passion. You can't teach heart. You can't teach organizing. You have to do it. And I think that having that firsthand is something you'll always take with you. Alana, I want to talk to you. This question's for you specifically. Mm-hmm. This generation, Gen Z especially, but also my generation, you know, millennials, are probably the most racially integrated generations, whether it's music, culture, what have you. Have you been surprised, or maybe not surprised, by the allyship of your white peers?
Honestly, just a little. I am a little because in school we don't have it, the topic doesn't ever really come up in school for us to like see, okay, who believes in what and who thinks like what about the topic. But I think, yeah, I was really surprised, not with Meredith, because Meredith and I have been friends for like forever, so I know where she stands on these, but like among people that I met in middle school and we just kind of don't talk anymore, that they came to the protest and, you know, walked with us and talked to us and just like really showed support. Yeah, I was just a bit surprised, but you know, with that comes the other side. And I was also extremely surprised to see how some of my white peers didn't actually support the movement. And so, you know, you're in like a crossroads with, oh, but you're my friend, but you know, I'm black, so, you know, you have to kind of support my life. It's really just been slightly overwhelming.
I want to touch on that, what you said, because there is this narrative out there that Generation Z, millennials, my generation, that they don't care about these issues, that it's not a big deal. But what I just heard you say is that there, you actually heard pushback from people who said, I'm your friend, but didn't support the, that's like the biggest oxymoron of all time. I mean, how is that even possible? but so talk about that and, you know, what their rationale was. What did they say to you? How did they even approach you saying, hey, you're my friend as a black woman, but I don't support the movement?
Yeah, well, one of my friends, I'm not going to name any names, or one of my old friends, I guess now, it was very, he almost like used the fact that he wasn't black as an excuse. He said like, well, I'm choosing to be quiet because, pretty much because I can, and it's not really my issue to talk about, so I don't really care about it. And honestly, I see it a lot with a lot of my white peers on the football team. And it's surprising to me too, because some of their best friends are also black on the football team. And I think they just use the excuse that A, it's not happening to them, and B, like, nobody else around them is talking about it. They use that as an excuse to just stay silent. And I take silence as acceptance. So unless you're actively arguing against it, then you're just letting it happen.
Have you canceled some friendships?
Oh yeah. Yes.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Meredith, I'm going to flip the question for you. As a young white person with your entire future ahead of you, have you had conversations of race before in your family and what have you? And then what was the response as you joined this movement with black students at your school and across the community? What did you hear from your white peers?
I think definitely having the family conversations and the friend conversations, it's hard because as I don't have personal experience with it. I will never be discriminated against for my skin tone. It's definitely, I can't bring up my personal experience with that, but I can try as hard as I can to have them rationalize the fact that they will never either. And it's really hard to have those tough conversations because a lot of the times that when they're not progressively thinking, they don't want to have mature conversations. They want to attack you and call you names and blame you. But it's just, it's so important to just work through that. And I am currently, or was currently, having a conversation with a peer who, instead of like listening to the fact that there was a football petition going out, and instead of realizing that he was putting football over social justice issues, he just kind of started attacking me instead. And it's become like cancel culture. And instead of like trying to rationalize with people on the fact that they're putting their personal life, especially as a white person, over social justice issues is racist, instead of accepting that fact and trying to grow from there, they just kind of go into a shell and start attacking people. And
yeah,
I don't know how to say more without saying names and everything. It's just
and of course we don't want to put people on blast here, right? But if I were the Shade Room, I'd be making a lot more money than I am right now. But no, I totally understand kind of that weird juxtaposition, and I could see how that would be difficult. But it's also interesting how you've internalized that struggle. Even though, like you said, you don't understand it, you can empathize with it. And it seems to me that there's even an empathy gap here, that people can't see themselves in other people's shoes.
Oh, 100%. I think that a lot of white people, especially since we live in, suburban, we live in a suburban white area. There's a lot of white privilege, including myself. I have it. Every single one of my peers has it. My white peers does. And the fact that they, instead of using it to try to promote the social justice that we're vying for, they use it to hide from the fact that there's an issue. And it's just saying that to be silent is to be compliant. The fact that they're choosing silence over helping their friends and their peers is not only just disgusting to me, it's quite privileged. And it's just they don't want to do anything about it. And that's also something that needs to change, is that everyone should want equality and equity for their peers.
Alana, what do you think the threat is? Because if they're silent, and you said earlier in the program that silence, that you take silence as complicity, what does that say?
Like, I just believe, like, in general, if you truly, truly believe in something, you are going to want to speak up for it. Like Meredith said, the same way they all posted the football petition to play football this year, and not a single, or at least I didn't see a single one of them post a, like, sign this petition for the justice of Breonna Taylor. I didn't see any of that on any of their stories. It's just really interesting to see how silence for one issue can just mean something totally different than for silence for another issue. Because if they stayed silent about the football thing, cool, like, I mean, it's not hurting anybody. But when people aren't advocating for Black equality, then you're literally, like, putting a whole race down. And it's not something that's just like, oh, I'm just going to stay silent because I can. It's literally, like, more harmful to stay silent as a white peer than to actually speak up.
Oh, and I'm going to ask this question too. It's a kind of a flip on what I asked Meredith a few moments ago. Were you surprised about the Black reaction, Black student reaction to this movement? Because I think for a lot of us, I'm African American as well, that it's like, well, I've known this has been going on. It wasn't new to me. You know, my grandfather had to lie to get a job in the 1950s. I'm the first generation in my family, and I'm in my 20s, born with the right to vote. My mother was not born with the right to vote in this country. So this is not a surprise. So what was the response of the Black students as this movement was starting to take shape?
Most of my Black friends, they definitely, or all, I should say, all of my Black friends supported me and our movement and the decision. It was whether or not they really spoke about it. And I think, and I don't mean to make this like a gender thing, I think boys especially are a little bit more afraid to speak out against their own friends. And I know people are always pinning teenage girls against each other, but if we have an idea that we believe, we will speak about it. And as a Black man, most high schoolers, or since most of the friends that I know are 18 now, I know that they believe in the cause because they've told me, but I think it's more they're afraid of being ostracized by their friends or being judged by their friends. And even though it's like a silly thing to think, like, you're just advocating for your right to live or whatever.
I mean, hell, to not get shot. I mean, it's like,
right?
I mean, goodness.
It's just interesting to see how they take situations into their hands and what they do to advocate for them. So I think, I mean, speaking to all, like, Black boys and Black men, like, advocating for yourself is not gonna, you know, make all your friends run away. They're still gonna be there. If they're your true friends, they're gonna be there to support you.
Right. And I think it's also important too that what I've loved seeing in the last portion of the movement here is that we have LGBTQ Blacks like myself included in this movement as well. And I think that that is highly important that we say that, you know, all Black lives matter too. And that has caused some strife too, a little bit within the movement. But I want to move to the fact that, I mean, you are incredibly professional, efficient. You're doing things that people triple your age are not doing. What do old people not get?
I kind of think, okay, personally for me, especially since a lot of, like, my white relatives are a lot older, I think they're just stuck in the past. They're stuck with the ideas their parents gave them. They're stuck with the ideas they heard on the radio, in their media when they were younger, and they don't want to move forward. And I think we're even seeing, especially seeing that politically, as we are with political mantras specifically, like a Make America Great Again. It's pulling from the past where America was great. And when America was great, racism was still here. If we want to say it even was great, because it wasn't. It's kind of pulling from the past where they're stuck in their own childhoods, and they want that security and that, just, I mean, they just want racism back again. And a lot of the, I mean, as harsh as that sounds, white security comes with the oppression of people of color, of Black, Indigenous, Hispanic, Asian oppression. And it's just, they want that back in order to boost their own ego and boost their own social standing. And I think that's why a lot of the older, like the older generations, especially boomer and later, they just want that security back. And that's, we're not going to let that happen, especially once Gen Z gets old enough to vote and old enough to run for office. It's not happening. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of progression that needs to and will happen while we're alive.
Right. And we're just starting to see some millennials my age, like an AOC who is 28, you know, starting to make waves. But it's hard to do when you're like the only one. even though there's Katie Porter out of California who's doing interesting work. But Alana, your take on that?
I think inclusivity. It's like they, on from what I've experienced personally, at least, they understand, like, they understand what's happening. They just, A, they don't want, like, their family involved. They don't want this to be a conversation for anybody but themselves. And I think when, like, the topic comes up, they shut their mind out to all possibilities but their own, which, you know, that, like, gives no room for, like, improvement, no room for, you know, to learn. So I think what they're just missing in general is just understanding and inclusivity. And also, I just think they don't understand, like, the, like, severity of it, because they see the violence in the, like, protests, they see the riots, and they think, like, oh, they're doing this for fun, or, oh, like, they just want to make noise, or they want to just make a mess. And two things, most of the riots haven't even been started by the Black Lives Matter movement. It's been started by usually white supremacists. But also, they don't understand the anger that, like, you know, the younger generation feels. We watched our grandparents fight for their rights, and we heard stories about their grandparents fighting for their rights. And it's like, well, we're here now in the 21st century, still fighting for the same thing. You know, it's getting old. So I just think old people just need to realize, like, this isn't something that's just popping up. It's something that we're tired about and that we're talking about and that we're not going to stop talking about because, you know, it needs to be heard and it needs to be fixed.
Where do you kind of see Equiteens as a movement going?
For all of us, the education part is really towards KUSD because that's what we know. As far as like where it's going, we really do want to make it like an official brand, mostly for protection, you know, so people can't use it for like things we don't agree with. But as for education, since my parents or my mom, she works in KUSD, we have a bigger foothold like in the education department. So that's why, and since we're students, we can speak personally on our experiences and our issues that we've faced in the school system. That's why we want to just stick with like school partnerships or, you know, education partnerships so that we can really make a difference, because all kids go through school. So if we can change things in the school system, then we can change things for children. And then when they grow up, you know, maybe they won't be racist, hopefully. Like, hopefully, like, we have done something in their lives at a young age that'll change the way they view the world.
You have a rally coming up this Sunday, July 26th. It's a youth Black Lives Matter rally. Either one of you take this question, or both. Talk about kind of the process of formulating this rally and kind of the goal of what you're trying to accomplish this Sunday.
This is Meredith. This rally is a youth-led rally, and it's focusing on Black voices. So Sophia and Alana, and then two other African-American speakers are going to be speaking at the rally, and then there are two African-American boys who are going to be leading the march down the street. And we're partnering with St. Mary's to kind of just bring more attention. And I think this rally is mostly just about we have the eyes of the youth. Now let's bring that in front of a different area than we did before. St. Mary's and the Lincoln Park neighborhood are vastly different areas of Kenosha. Let's show that we have the support of both of these areas, and all of Kenosha backs what we are saying. And I think that's a really extremely important for us to show that, like, there's a lot of white allyship in the side of town that we live on, closer to Indian Trail, and that these people's friends are going to see that they were at this rally and say, like, well, now what am I going to do? If there's a racist, closeted racist in Indian Trail, and they're seeing that, or at St. Mary's, at that church, at that area, they're going to see, well, this is here too. What am I going to have to change around these people? And they're going to have to change their views because it's in their face, it's personal. And I think that's really important for that reason. But it's definitely, this rally is lifting Black voices. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. And that they're young voices too, right? There are parts of your generation that are going to be sharing what they believe at this rally. Well, we are heading towards the end of our program here today. And I'll be honest with you folks, you know, I've been down, you know, these last few weeks and, you know, dare I say a version of depression. But dealing with this interview and hearing what these young people have had to say, you know, it's given me inspiration and hope that, you know, we are in really excellent hands if these individuals are going to be at the helm of it. So thank you guys for that. Final question. In 10 years, what's your biggest hope for Kenosha?
I hope that they will have, well, I hope two things. I hope that they will have more spotlight on just like racial training and just racial like equality just in general. Like, you don't see a lot of like, even things as simple as billboards, you don't see anything that has like, oh, you know, inclusivity and all that stuff. Like, it's just really not here because, you know, it's the people who live here obviously have probably lived here their whole lives, and it's just like the simple idea that, you know, things just get swept under the rug. So I really hope that more people will be brought to just light on really, really important issues like this. I also hope that one day, this is like just something I was thinking about, I don't even know why, they will just have less cornfields. I feel like that just, it's just like depressing to look at cornfields all the time. And like, you know, less cornfields, happier people, and then happier people will be more open to talking about racial injustice. That's my connection.
I don't know how to top that now. I think, okay, so for me, two things I really just hope Kenosha grows as is more representation of people of color, whether that be in Kenosha politics, whether that be in our school system, whether that be just anywhere really, more people of color running businesses, everything, just more representation. And I also just hope that Kenoshans kind of open their eyes and start to realize the injustices that are happening next door to them, down the street from them, like just all around them. And the fact that they consume Black culture every single day. They, I mean, I'm referring to white people. It's just, it's an endless stealing of Black culture. So why not support it? So starting to realize what businesses they support that are inherently racist, and just start to adjust their day-to-day life to support all people instead of the ones they're comfortable with and have been supporting. So I think just inclusivity, just as Alana said, I hope you see. And less cornfields.
I cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedules to be on the program today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having us.
Meredith Kaufman and Alana Carmichael from Equiteens Kenosha. They have a rally this Sunday, July 26th. For more information, you can go to their Instagram, Equiteens Kenosha. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.